Hello, everyone. Welcome to Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Show. I'm your host, Willie Morales. And on today's show, I have Mike Brown. He's a wealth investment expert and best-selling author of the book, The Real Perspective. It is just a little photocopy, but you definitely got to get this book. This is a really good book. Mike, thank you so much for Mike even got the real deal.
I got to send you one, William.
All right. Sounds good. So, Mike, how are you? Thank you so much for being on Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Show. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. So you're also, if I'm right, the co-founder and managing member of Red Fox Capital, not to be confused with the comedian, right, Mike? Red Fox?
That's right. I've been asked that more than once now.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that's two X's, right?
Exactly. Yeah, his, I think it was two X's. Yeah. So Mike, how did you get into the financial aspect of business, and were you always interested in finance as a youngster? Not to say you're old like we are, but right. Were you always entrepreneurial?
I was entrepreneurial from day one. Don't know where I got it, but I was always interested in the stock market, investing, starting businesses, and real estate. And first part of the book kind of gives you an idea of my trail. But I was lucky enough to get an apprenticeship in a commercial real estate investment and development company and learned the ropes there for about 10 years. And then branched off with another partner from that firm. We started Red Fox Capital, which is a commercial real estate investment firm. And then we've created Red Fox Wealth, which is a comprehensive financial advisory service firm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And how long you've been doing that, especially on the commercial side, but also on the investment side, you know, especially working with people. Yeah.
15 years.
Okay.
15.
Wow.
Yeah. And with the same partner, not one fight. Isn't that amazing? So,
what's your secret? We gotta do that. That's a different show.
That's a whole different podcast.
That's a different podcast. Yeah. How guys could get along so well after 15 years. So, Mike, getting on the wealth management side, when you first talk to a client, what is it the first thing that they want from you? Is it some, obviously the experience and, you know, delivering the goods, so to, you know, quote unquote?
Well, I think a lot of times they don't know what they don't know. A little bit of my past in the financial service industry, I came from Merrill Lynch. So I saw how the big wirehouses handled their clients. And one of the biggest concerns I had with clients were, you know, we preach every day that you're well diversified. You have a very diversified portfolio, but that's true. But you're only diversified in Wall Street products. And I found it to be dangerous and really not a solid, comprehensive wealth plan or retirement plan. So, when I started to, you know, discuss Red Fox Capital, some of our private investments outside of Wall Street, that was strictly prohibited. And I was told I would be fired on the spot if I ever opened my eyes to the clients of any other thing outside of what we could sell there at Merrill Lynch. So that was the day I resigned and left and created a new type of financial planning, what we call integrative portfolio management, where we bring in private investments, our favorite commercial real estate. And we found bringing those two disciplines together without any conflict of interest, we're able to provide a much better, solid plan for our clients and reduce risk and actually raise overall returns. It's, it's a great mix. And I found that if you don't eliminate those conflicts, people have commissions that they want to grab fees from their clients. So they want to push you in these certain products. We're completely agnostic. We're fiduciary. So we put the clients and their money where it's best suitable for them.
You know, Mike, I'm glad you hit on that because especially on the 401k, which I'll definitely want to talk to you about that. When I was working at a certain hospital and they gave us, I think it was two plans. I think it was Prudential, and I don't want to screw anybody up or anything, but let's say it was these two financial services. Mike, obviously in 2006, seven, I didn't, like you said, in fact, it was 1997, if I remember correctly, 97, 98, 99, around there. I didn't know what I didn't know. Right. So when they offered me their package, I had no clue. I'm going to be honest with you, no clue. So I picked, I think it was like 20 different types of stocks, ETFs, mutual funds, and that was it, nothing else. Right. So I picked 5% of each. And all of a sudden, you know, the market is great. I mean, you know, this 2004, 2005, everything is just, great. The market's still going up, right? Anyway, it crashed. I forced myself after that where I lost half my value. And then I had to take some money out to survive. Mm-hmm. I think, Mike, and you probably contested this, a lot of people don't know, like you said, they don't know what they know. Right. And they're forced to learn about finances. So for you, when you talk to a client, and especially on a 401k side, if they're employed, do you set up the retirement plan according to their goals or to the market? Does my question make any sense at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I think from a if we handle a 401k program for a company,
right?
We'll go in and set up a system for them that. You know, there's a lot of suitability issues with a client. If you're in your 20s, you're going to have a different perspective than you have in your 50s,
right?
Or getting into pre-retirement. So those all have to be allocated and provided to those specific strategies.
Right.
So yeah, the cookie cutter approach, it's great for the guys, you know, collecting the money and not having to do anything, just and watching your future up, you know, just up for grabs. We don't like to take that approach. So we try to customize it as much as possible and explain to the individual client what they're actually getting themselves into. Fee structures, like all your mutual funds, you know, mutual funds below what you're seeing as fees could be on average 3.7% in fees that you never even see. And that just erodes your overall retirement and wealth building.
Yeah, I read a book about that one time about the fees that it adds up in 20 years. You could lose $20,000-$30,000 if I'm correct in that, or it could be a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So your plan does fit whether they're 20-year-olds or 50-year-olds, right? Now at 50-year-olds, obviously you I hate to say you're running out of time, but you're running out of let's say you're running out of time.
Is your best building years, asset years, your highest earning years, most likely.
Yeah.
So that's when you've got to start getting your plans in place, you know, and allocate those resources to where it can maximize your wealth building and retirement and start getting prepared to, you know, take your required distributions, look at moving monies from qualified to non-qualified, looking at maybe some life insurance strategies, you know, all those kind of things need to start being looked at.
So when you set up someone's 401k plan, let's say they have a job and they come to you for assistance, if they wanted a 401k outside of their job, is that allowed? Can someone have two different types? I mean, there's a max that you could just put away right every year, but can you do both? Can someone have both types of retirement accounts?
A lot of people have what they call solo 401ks or self-directed, where a lot of your listeners probably have or will use for real estate investing.
Yeah.
Like for example, I have a self-directed 401k that that we use for real estate investing. Mm-hmm. And instead of the old, you know, vanilla chart of mutual fund selections, then you get decisions where your money is. And it could be anything. It can be anything from, you know, buying gold and silver to real estate to, you know, the world's your oyster there.
Right. I love that. So a self-directed 401, and that's more for the real estate investor type, be for any type of investor.
And you can do a self-directed IRA as well.
And how about a Roth? How does a Roth fit in there in your financial planning for your clients, or it depends, I guess, on the situation?
Right. It does in a situation where, you know, we look at the debt the country has. We're almost $27 trillion in debt. So we're right now in the lowest tax brackets that we've ever seen in the country. So we know the taxes are going to go up. So we do try to take clients that have a lot of qualified money in their 401ks where they haven't paid taxes. They're deferring it until their later years. We found that converting some of that money into a Roth and pay your taxes now in the lower tax bracket, we can do simulations that show you how much money you're going to save in taxes, and how much more growth you can get, you know, at the end. So we call it like, would you rather tax the seed or tax the harvest? So you prefer to tax the seed when it's little.
Right.
And it's remarkable that what you can do in that situation. So we're trying to get out there and communicate that to people to be wary of your qualified accounts like 401ks, because our accountants always told us, oh, you'll be in a lower tax bracket when you retire. But that may be old school advice now. We're not so sure we will be in lower tax brackets when we retire. So we start thinking about that.
No, I love that. So investing in today's market, we're going to financial planning. Should we start with a percentage of our income from our paycheck to start? I mean, do you advise your clients on a certain percentage that they can afford to put away? Again, I know I'm pretty sure it goes by age specific in my mind. Mm-hmm. So let's say you're starting at 20 and then let's go towards 50. How would you set up a percentage of their paycheck being into a retirement account?
I mean, the first thing I would say is set a goal no matter what it is, and just make sure you stick to it. And like they always say, pay yourself first. So, you know, whether that may be 20%, or some people can and live Spartan-like and put 50% into saving.
Right.
You know, it really depends on your unique situation, but I would say that the most important thing is to set up a specific amount and stay on that track. And pay yourself first.
And have it automated, right? Because this way you set it and forget about it.
Even better.
Yeah, I love that idea.
Yeah.
Let's talk about real estate investment trusts, REITs. Yeah. It seems like a good option to invest in, but I don't often hear about it in the financial TV stations. Right. And I'm calling them out, CNBC, Bloomberg Television, now Yahoo Finance Online. Right. Mike, is there a reason why we don't, or maybe it's me, I don't hear often about REITs. Is there something maybe not tangible about that asset class? What do you think?
I don't know. it's real estate investment trusts are probably the go-to answer from a traditional financial advisor who doesn't have access to private real estate deals.
Okay,
so they can, if you came to me and said, I want to be in real estate and I'm a Merrill Lynch guy, I can put you in a real estate investment trust. The problem that I see with real estate investment trusts are they're basically stocks. They correlate directly with Wall Street. So you're not truly diversifying. And what I'm trying to do is build a asset allocation that uncorrelated assets. So that's, REITs are fine as long as you understand that they are going to correlate with Wall Street, and you understand that's fine, but I still want to see you diversify correctly. So a REIT would not categorize myself as an uncorrelated asset.
Okay, so if you do advise one of your clients, it'll be like a very, very small percentage, not to, like you said, because it's tied up to the stock market. Yeah. It's amazing because, you know, it's funny, I don't even think about it that way. I always think about it as a separate class, but you're right. If you know, one thing though, Mike, we rely on tenants, whether it or it's a people business, mm-hmm. whether it's somebody doesn't pay, then you got to come out of your pocket, mm-hmm. or that's a losing investment. With what's happening today in the world with the pandemic, has it affected business in any way for you? And if so, how are you slowly getting out of it?
Yeah.
Especially on the investment side. Yeah.
On the investment side, we had some deals on contracts and real estate assets in early March. And we saw a lot of the financial institutions, the banks, et cetera, were skittish. They're like, we don't even know what's happening tomorrow. So we really don't have a good grasp on what the value of this particular property is. So we kind of pulled back. And because if you think back in March, we were truly thought an Armageddon was coming. I mean, the shutdown. So we didn't know what was going to happen. Ironically, looking back, the numbers have stayed pretty strong. The multifamily space, they thought that was going to get pretty hard. But we saw rental was paid on time. Most likely, I think we saw like it went from almost to like 97% of rents were paid on time, which was, no one was predicting that, but that's held pretty true.
Yeah.
Some of the retail tenants, you know, you've seen some of the restaurant space and the mom and pops have had some problems. But, you know, I just drove down the street today and saw a new retail center being built, and it's already leased out before it's finished. So I think, once again, real estate's local. You know, there's going to be some dips. You have to understand which asset class, where you are with it, what it looks like for the future. But commercial real estate seems to be pretty strong right now. And I think it will remain strong.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And it's funny too here, Mike, in the New York area, you know, I mean, like the news of the day has been the vacancies.
Right.
New York. Yeah. I think the last count was like 16,000 empty apartments, and you know, landlords are scrambling. Now I see like they're lowering rents just to fill the apartments. Aside from that, going back to the financial side of investing, where do we see ETFs and index funds? Is that something that you provide for your clients, or again, it all depends on the situation and their financial, you know, what they need. Yeah.
Thanks for the disclosure. So the SEC doesn't call us.
Yes. Yes, yes. 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 Yes.
You know, the ETFs, yeah, we do provide that. It's a low cost, you know, way to look at things. It keeps you diversified. You know, we also offer, you know, managed portfolios that don't cost a lot more, but the returns are better, that we're actively trading. So I like to call it, we're, you know, hedge fund type strategies at a ETF price.
Oh, I love that.
We're able to go out there and tactically look at the market on a daily basis and make those trades. Some of our portfolio managers have had very high returns this year through COVID, just knowing where to go and where to get out.
Right.
And put stop losses in. So we're gonna put a base for us, a floor there for you. So we're not gonna lose, but this, if things happen to go down, we'll sell out and then lock in the upside. So I think it's, you know, the old buy and hold days, you know, is just not my way to go. I think you've got to, in Wall Street investments, you've got to play it every day, and you've got to tactically do it with professionals that are fine tuned into that. And our portfolio managers, that's all they do. And if they don't perform, then they're eliminated.
Right. Right. Wow. Yeah. And, you know, I like that idea though, Mike, because again, you're helping out the client and you're actively managing pretty much their money every day. I didn't even know that actively managing and seeing how the market is, whether it's ETFs, anything else. Mm-hmm. And so talk to me about going back to the 401k, Mike, I hear real estate investors talk about how bad it is and all that. Mike, and you know, you've been in the financial industry for a long time. Real estate could just be just as bad. You know, if you're relying on tenants and they don't pay, then you got to come out of your pocket. I've been fascinated with stocks for the last 10, 15 years, especially after what happened with the market crash. Let's talk about your book for a second. Mm-hmm. When you wrote it, what was the message that you tried to get out at that time? I mean, I think it's been published since September. So it's recently, wrote it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the message I was really trying to convey to everyone is, you know, step back from the traditional financial advisor and look at other strategies, really strategies the wealthy employ every day. Right. The top 1%, they don't like to lose money. And so let's watch what they do. And, you know, all of them consistently have about a 20 to even as high as a 40% allocation into private investments. We prefer private commercial real estate investments, mm-hmm. But that can include private equity, you know, precious metals, private deals, any array of products like that. And then keep Wall Street, you know, at, you know, 60 to 80%. And then you talk about that in more detail. But what we really wanted to do was explain the financial service industry being somewhat biased, whether that's intentional or not. Stepping back and taking a different approach was really the focus on the book. And I think people really getting the message And it's, we've had callers come in from all around the country just over the past month saying, thanks for, you know, letting us take a look at this. And I never really thought of it this way.
No, and so it's called The Real Perspective by Mike Brown. It's published on Amazon, so you can definitely pick it up there. I'll definitely add it to the show notes.
Yeah, thank you.
No, definitely. So let's talk about you. Yeah. So your appointment for being the director of finance for the Republican Senatorial Committee. How did that come about? That's kind of exciting.
That's a long time ago. I kind of started doing politics at a young age and ended up doing it around the country for quite a few years and started off in a Senate campaign and then just grew and started running congressional and gubernatorial, senatorial committees around the country. Ended up running the Republican Party finances in Pennsylvania and then became the national director of what they call T-100, which George Bush created, H.W. Bush.
That's the senior Bush?
Yeah.
So talk about that too after, because that's exciting.
That's really where I got the insights on really how the very affluent work. George H.W. Bush created that initially for his high donors, his major donors, extreme wealth. If I rattled off a bunch of names in the club, you would know them.
Yeah.
And billionaire status and such. And so I worked closely with these individuals and, watch how they invested, watch what types of businesses they were in and found it very, very interesting. But what's fun is back in those days in the late 90s, we were just trying to get into high tech. High tech was just kind of starting. Okay. All of our big donors were mostly in commercial real estate. Either developers or investors. And now we're seeing this whole, the high tech come over. I remember some of the old real estate guys were like, man, if I knew I could start a software package and create this much money without the hassles I have to do in real estate, I'd take it all day long. But it was an awesome experience and it led me to where I am today.
That's amazing. Yeah. Unless I missed it, was that a path that you wanted to go to at the beginning, or was that something that you fell into as you was getting old, especially in the mid to late 90s?
Yeah, that was something I wanted. That was a goal that I wanted to do. Yep.
Wow.
And just got burned out.
Oh, I can imagine.
Like, how can I help more people doing something besides, collecting votes?
Right. So, you touch on something about the billionaires and the millionaires. If you could touch base on some of the assets that they invest in, in your opinion, and you're there, what are the top three asset classes do they, I always hear financials. I hear, real estate. Then I hear fashion, technology, but in your experience, what have you seen?
Well, I think, when you get to that kind of a wealth, they become a little bit more conservative. The extreme wealthy I found just do not like to lose a dollar. I mean, that's their main goal. We do not want to lose principal. So a lot of times what they'll do to hedge in principal will be to invest in, annuity products, fixed type products where they're getting a strong return, but there's zero risk of losing their money.
Okay.
They'll go into solid, type companies or play an index, S&P, Dow. An allocation of, precious metals and then a strong portion into real estate, a lot of real estate holdings. Typically, if you look across the board, most wealth has been created through the real estate side of things. And not to mention, you have a lot of depreciation tactics. The extreme wealthy love the tax minimization game. So how do we lower our taxes the best as possible? Like we see in the news and every day, Donald Trump only paid $750 in taxes.
And we were all shocked when we heard that one.
But, he employs some of the tactics that are completely legal with real estate. He's able to take depreciations, carry over losses, carried interest strategies. So where you're taking all your gains and they're not taxed as capital gains, they are taxed as capital gains at a lower rate, unlike your ordinary income. There's so many great things you can do with those products.
And I think that, and that's the thing, Mike, a lot of people, you know, they hear whether it's any politician or businessman. I think it was a few years ago where Warren Buffett said that his secretary paid right. more in taxes in percentage than he did.
Right.
But if you, and taking on his side for a second, if you're creating jobs and you're creating an industry, so to speak, you are providing jobs. So it seems like the government, especially whether it's the Republicans or Democrats, and I don't want to get too political, but if you're creating jobs, the incentives are there. And I think it's there for every day for the working class, for the 9 to 5, if they see that it's there for them.
Yeah, but it's taxed differently because he's making money off his investments. So it's
right.
the capital gains rate, and his secretary is working for an ordinary income tax rate.
Right.
So that's the difference. And that's why we try to get people into those investments, like we talked about earlier,
yeah.
in the show, saving that money and putting the money to work for you. It's as simple as that. Warren Buffett has no advantage over you, other than the fact he has just more money in the kitty that's paying him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, Mike, listen, first of all, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to Peer-to-Peer Real Estate. Really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Besides your book, which is called The Real Perspective, let's say Secret Investments Your Financial Advisor Won't Tell You, what other books you recommend for my audience and your audience?
Well, you have a subject matter?
Let's say investing. I think that would be great to learn. Yeah, if or any book you recommend, it doesn't matter. It could be even a personal development book. It doesn't matter.
Well, I tell you, I just finished reading Charles Schwab's new memoir.
Oh, okay.
Invested, and it was really cool because I saw some similarities between Charles Schwab and myself, where he first discovered the discount brokerage model.
Right.
And was really when the federal regulation allowed for discounted commissions, he was afraid he'd be wiped out by the big boys and the Merrill Lynch's and the Morgan Stanley's. And what happened was they went the opposite direction. They raised commissions. And wow. So that kept him in the game and created what we know today as Charles Schwab.
Right.
What we're hoping to do is create that same thing where we're integrating people's portfolios and creating a new form of financial planning to take out the conflicts of interest and help people build wealth and reduce their risk.
All right, so it's Charles Schwab's memoir?
His new biography, autobiography.
Autobiography, okay, yeah. Wow. Definitely put that on the show notes.
Yeah.
And Mike, if somebody want to get in contact with you, what's the best way?
Yeah, our website's redfoxcapital.co.
Okay.
And they can email me, my personal email directly. It's mikebrown1757@gmail.com. That's where a lot of my listeners and things just can email me directly if they have any questions. And we can do an asset allocation model for them, complimentary, and have a free conversation.
No, sounds good. So I don't know if I saw this on your bio. What show do you have that I missed it on your bio? Is it a podcast yourself?
No, we're going to start a podcast.
Cool.
Soon. We'd love to have you on.
I'd love to be on. Thank you.
It seems like a lot to get it up and running, as you probably well know.
Yeah.
But we hope to have it up soon. So I think, you know, have a discussion and talk about all the issues, you know, affecting investors, you know, bring on CPAs, tax accountants, trust planners, and then maybe some fun stuff like a golf pro.
Yeah, no, sounds good. Do you have a name for it already?
I don't know. What do you think? I was thinking maybe The Real Perspective.
I think it should be called that. Yeah, I like the name. The Real Perspective on Investing or on Retirement, whatever you want to call it. But I think that'd be a great name.
Yeah. All right. Excellent. It's done.
All right. Sounds good. Well,
all right,
Mike, again, thank you so much for being on. I really, really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. And you'll be on The Real Perspective soon enough.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Mike.
All right.
Well, everyone, that was Mike Brown, and you can find him at redfoxcapital.co. That's redfoxcapital.co. Mike, thank you so much for being on today's Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Show. Really appreciate it. You can find me at peer-to-peerrealestate.com. That's peer-to-number-two, peerrealestate.com. Check out our shows. Check out our blog. We try to keep this up to date as quick as possible. Also, if you guys go to Apple Podcasts, please subscribe, leave a review. Look for us at Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Podcast. And a couple of more things, guys, before I go. Do not give up on your dream. Fight for it. Protect it. Guard it. Don't let anyone talk you out of it. And I really believe if you keep the momentum going, good things will happen. Anyway, on behalf of Peer-to-Peer Real Estate, I'm William Morales. Until next time, thanks, everybody. Have a great day, and please stay safe.